Hello, everyone, and welcome to BXB's Bits and Bobs episode 41. This time coming to you on an early, bright and early, crisp Saturday morning in February. We are not going against the church directly this week. We are not fighting the Lord's power himself. So perhaps we shall succeed where in the previous times we may have failed. I'm your host, Ben. Today with me is Richard.
Prap, 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 prap.
Bringing the gangster energy. Loving it, Rich. That was awesome. And Joel, compete with that.
I'm just trying to drink as much coffee as I can. It's quite early. I might have to go for a wee halfway through this podcast.
Well, yes, trying to make schedules align on a February weekend turns out it was actually quite difficult. So we went for 10 a.m. on a Saturday to record a podcast, which, looking at the show notes, hardly has any content. So completely worth it. So totally worth it. But that, whenever we do that, though, it's the ones that become 2.5 hours, 3 hours long. Yeah. So stay
tuned for that lack of content.
Just thought I'd hype it up at the beginning there. But these are often the ones people like the most, when we haven't got to like tick 1,200 boxes of, you know, all this big news happened, all these big games got played. We played a couple of games. There's been some stuff. But we'll get to that in a bit. Let's just do our usual ramble through what we've all watched on Netflix, which I think seems to be like actually its own segment now. I might actually put that in the show notes, what we watched in Netflix
this week, the last three weeks.
Yeah. But that's, I blame Netflix for that, because they're always putting out shit, aren't they? So it's worth it. Have we all seen, I'm going to start off with this, have we all seen the end of Star Trek?
No.
I haven't.
Richard.
I've got so much catching up to do.
Disappointing.
They keep adding stuff, so like, yeah, I'll go back to that. Netflix is like my gaming backlog now. It's just a waste.
Yes,
of things.
Yes. Forgotten. I was browsing through. It has a, I forget what device it on, had a new interface, and I could actually look at my whole list. You know your list, and I was like, oh damn, that's like 14 years of content. I'm never gonna watch this, am I? I should probably start removing things and being realistic, because that's just nuts. It's the old joke, isn't it? Netflix, you don't go on there to watch things. You go on there to add things to your list.
Yes,
that's all you end up doing. But okay, no spoilers for Star Trek for Richard, which makes it kind of maybe redundant us even talking about it, Joel. I thought that little bit at the end was cool, and maybe how they wrapped up the Klingon War, bit disappointing. But
I was going to say, I was disappointed with the last episode, actually. It felt to me, it had all the hallmarks of, oh, crap, we've run out of budget. We need to wrap this up in one episode or something, if you know what I mean. It all felt like it came to a very quick and abrupt end. So I was kind of hoping they'd stretch that storyline out a lot further than they did. But the episodes before it were good.
I'm not surprised it tied off the Klingon War in this season, because they've sort of spoken about the structure of the show and how it was originally obviously pitched as an anthology show where each season was going to be completely different characters. And I think they might still do that.
I didn't know that.
Considering how that ends with that reveal at the end, I think the biggest surprise ever would be a new season, entirely new cast. Let's go to an entirely different time period. Can you imagine the impact that would have on the audience and how exciting that would be? I'd be hyped for that, because I think if you really delve into what happens at the end of that episode, it becomes a real mess of continuity problems. So it's possible that they just won't. They'll just pretend it didn't happen.
Star Wars fans would like that, would they? Star Trek fans.
Right? Star Trek fans. I don't know. I mean, it's old school, maybe not. New school, perhaps. I mean, I liked it. I thought it was quite cool. I think the idea of that, like messing with the format, which they have done for this entire season, it felt like what it was, what we were watching, is the birth of Starfleet, the birth of the Federation in the classic sense, which is like come from the Discovery crew. You know, they pulled the Federation out of this dark place at the end there, and it actually ends in a very classically Star Trek kind of way. You know, diplomacy and thinking their way out of the situation rather than fighting their way out. Which I thought was really nice in a way. It was a bit underwhelming, but I can totally see what they were going for. But yeah, I thought, for the most part, though, that's been a fantastically good show. Really, really enjoyed it.
Worth me catching up with then.
Yeah, man. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. We all did Cloverfield, though.
Yeah. Good.
Wow, that was what a cool thing, first of all, right, to show a trailer at the Super Bowl and then literally the same night have that film on Netflix, an anticipated film like that. Shame the film was kind of shit.
The film was awful, I thought.
Really wasn't good.
I think it pitched itself at a slightly different sort of tone than I expected, but I enjoyed it for what it was. It was funny.
Have you seen 10 Cloverfield Lane?
Yeah.
That's the problem for me, is that, my God, 10 Cloverfield Lane takes that whole idea in such a brilliantly different direction, and it's a tight, taut, you know, three-header thriller. And then you just go to this sort of mess of sci-fi concepts that don't really tie together. Is it comedy? Is it horror? Is it trying to be serious? Is it doing a Final Destination thing, which is what it felt like halfway through that movie? It's like the universe was actively trying to kill them, and then they just didn't really progress the idea, and it was
kind of silly, but you know, as a fan of Event Horizon, and even it was Dead,
oh come on, Event Horizon, on, it wasn't even 10% as scary as Event Horizon. not even like 5%. It was just stupid.
Yeah. No, but like, it had a kind of silly Evil Dead vibe as well.
Well, the bit with the arm, yeah. Like, what was that? Did we only hire Chris O'Dowd because we thought he does comedy? I've seen the IT Crowd. Like, was that literally what happened? It was such a weird... It's a shame because I think the cast was really good, like, for the most part, and diverse, but they just all felt squandered. And that fucking ending, mate. Oh, God. And the other thing that was awful about it is, like, you're watching it and you can see where all the reshoots have happened to fit in the Cloverfield shit. Like, it just felt so forced. Like, none of it felt organic at all. Like, all the stuff on Earth with her husband was just the most obviously added in later shit I've seen in a movie in a while. Like, that was like, oh, it's going to be a Cloverfield film. Well, we better make that obvious. Shit. It was just messy and lazy. But more of that from Netflix. I'm very much looking forward to Annihilation. I'm really, really excited for Annihilation in a couple of weeks' time.
What's Annihilation? I've not heard of that.
Well, this is the Natalie Portman-led film based on the Jeff Vandermeer books, the fantastic sci-fi books, but it's got a full theatrical release in the US. However, it's by Alex Garland, the director of Ex Machina. And, exactly. Yeah, get pumped. And the weird thing is, right, Paramount, they saw how badly Blade Runner did, right, and in the cinema, how it tanked. And they lost all confidence in actually distributing it internationally into cinemas. So it's going to Netflix instead 2 weeks after the US theatrical release. Now, if I was Alex Garland, as he said, he was like, well, I made this film for cinemas. It's kind of gutting that the distributor kind of decided to put it on TV instead. Yeah. But however, a lot more people will see it now. So that's really cool, and I think that's a huge big deal. Supposedly the reviews have been raving about it. It's proper thought-provoking hardcore sci-fi, and it looks fantastic, and they're saying like Natalie Portman's performance is brilliant, yet remember she's a really good actress kind of thing. So yeah, I'm really excited for that. That's March, like early March, something like that. So
excellent. I really like Alex Garland.
That Ex Machina was just wow.
Awesome. That was a great film.
That was the first Oscar Isaac movie I saw, and it's just like, yeah, I'll check out anything he's in now because he was and Donald Gleeson, wasn't it? Two guys that ended up in Star Wars, which is interesting. Yeah. But yeah, that was good, wasn't it? What else have you guys got on there? Oh, you watched The End of the Fucking World, Richard. I like the way you censored your show note, by the way. For my obviously very childlike mind, I couldn't handle fucking written down.
Well, I wanted to be consistent to how they present it, you know. I'm a pedant like that. That's how they write it on Netflix. Good show, that, based on comic book. So I guess you've seen it.
I didn't know it was based on a comic book, actually, mate. I was not aware.
Yeah, it's a graphic novel, apparently.
I thought I would have known that. Yeah, I had no idea. I saw that. I watched the first episode because Ashley, the sort of far removed actual controller and tech god of the website, recommended it on his Facebook. Yeah. And I thought it was really good. I just didn't get around to watching any more of it.
Well, it's so short that we kind of just blitzed it in a couple of nights. I think there's like 8 episodes or something, and they're about 20 minutes each. But it's so snappy. It's just so English. It's about a boy and a girl, teenagers. They meet up in school, and they're both kind of outcasts for their own reasons. The boy suspects he is a psychopath and fantasizes about killing, and decides he might want to kill this girl. And she doesn't obviously realize this, but she wants to get out of school, and they both go on a kind of road trip and find themselves. And, you know, it's not the typical road trip sort of experience. There's, you know, a lot of English sort of patter in there that makes it kind of charming. And yeah, it's just funny.
All right. No, I want to watch more of it. What I liked, it had a real distinct style, the first episode I watched. I remember it was like, oh, okay, this is different. Like, and he's talking about, fantasizing about killing people. And I'm like, well, you know, you're a teenage boy, probably. You're being bullied. And then, oh, no, I've already started murdering lots of animals. I am taking this serious. Like, I'm proper going down the serial killer route here. Yeah. This is something I'm as a career committing to. and it was just like, oh, okay, this is gonna be some dark shit.
Yeah.
And it did seem very cool actually in that regard. Mm-hmm. I need to check out some more of that. Yeah.
It does a great job of setting that up as like he's, you know, the most unempathetic character you could imagine, really, and you really start to care about him by the
interesting.
End.
Interesting. Okay. I'm going to watch some more of that. Yeah, Joel, please tell me that you were as blown away by Atomic Blonde as I was, because I think that's one of the best films for last year.
I thought it was okay. I liked there's that one sequence in the middle, that massive fight choreography sequence that's superb. But other than that, I thought the film was just okay.
I felt exactly the same. I got to that and thought, oh right, that's why this exists. Then is it?
Yeah. Yeah.
What sequence are you talking about?
Of Old Boy, kind of. It reminded me a bit of.
You're talking about the
well,
bit,
not,
the
not, not the overall plot of Old Boy, but just the presentation, I guess. Of just this one sequence in the middle that everyone kind of talks about.
Are you talking about the bit in the tenement building where she's like fighting her way?
Well, it goes between several buildings, doesn't it? It goes out into the streets, back into another building and stuff. And yeah, it's just a consistently long fight scene that looks like it's been shot in almost one. It's been stitched together in a way that it looks like a single shot scene. It's long and good and very well.
I just think it's incredible how many of her own stunts she does in that and stuff. Mm. And how it just feels incredibly grounded, that whole film. And I really loved its sense of place, that it felt very much like that moment in Germany, and it's a film that only really works in that moment. And I think I love it. It's a great spy thriller. I really enjoyed those sort of films anyway, but you don't get as many of them anymore. But I can see why the director left John Wick to do that. I can, especially considering how bad John Wick 2 is. I was like, oh yeah, this is a much better script than that kind of waste of space. But yeah, another one based on a comic book, actually. But you only thought it was okay. That's a bit of a shame. But yeah, I was impressed by her performance more than anything. I think Charlize Theron in that, she leads that movie like a male, like star would lead an action movie, you know, and you don't ever consider her any different, and she completely stands on her own 2 feet, and they don't really ever sort of go, oh, this is a woman, so therefore it's different because of this. She 100% holds her own throughout in that man's world, like, and is just dominant throughout it. She's fabulous.
It feels to me that goes a bit too far, though. It just feels like, you know, there's no real warmth there. I can't care.
But that's the point, mate. I mean, isn't that's 100% the point, because she's not meant to. When was Bruce Willis warm in Die Hard? When was John Wick warm?
Bruce Willis was Keanu funny Reeves in Die
warm?
Hard.
All right, when was Keanu Reeves warm in John Wick? I mean, it's like these. But you don't expect warmth from the male action leads. You don't. What are you talking about?
I don't know.
All right, when was Liam Neeson warm in Taken? I mean, like.
When he's got his
just
daughter
a stone
to care
cold
about.
Killer.
There's always something that gives you that hook to think that's why I care about this person. I didn't really care. It just kind of felt like they were trying too hard to make her not a female or not sort of touchy feely in any way, and it just became a little bit bland.
I can acknowledge that, but at the same time, I think it's probably required in a way, because for a woman to be convincing in that role, as soon as you show her, she falls in love. She falls in love with the French operative. And when the French, you know, there's your warmth. There's your human connection that you're kind of like looking for there. That's what that is. That's why that's there. But I mean, they have to go probably that extra mile to convince the audience of her badassness, as it were, as a woman, than you would as just Liam Neeson, who can just look up and sort of stare into the middle distance in a gruff way and go, I kill people. This is what I do. You know, that kind of thing. Or fucking Daniel Craig is yet another awesomely awful James Bond, you know. So
no, I get it. I appreciate that challenge is there. I don't feel that it met that challenge.
Well, what can I say? You guys are clearly all signing up with Gamergate tomorrow. we'll get to that later. I should mention, I've started watching Dragon Ball Z.
You messaged me about it, didn't you?
I'm watching it in time with like a podcast who are discussing it. So I'm doing like 5 episodes a week and then joining in with the community and like almost like if you were like a book club almost, but that's how I'm consuming DBZ Kai, which is hard because I have to stop myself.
So where are you up to in the story?
So, all right, Richard, have you ever watched any DBZ Kai?
No.
Right. Okay. Good. Well, you'll be as ignorant to it as I was then. I recommend it though. I am up to Vegeta just turning into a giant ape monster to fight Goku.
Okay, so you're still in the Saiyan saga, the very
I'm
first
still
part
in
of
the
it,
Saiyan yeah. saga. Yes, I am.
This is the best show because you can say any of that shit and it's not spoilers. It makes no fucking sense.
Yeah, everybody's fucking dead, Joel, except Krillin and Gohan. And it's like, but they did that amazing thing, right? I knew it was coming, where it's like Goku's like, oh, they're all dead. And Krillin's like, we should move their bodies so then we can resuscitate them. It's like, but how? There are no Dragon Balls. And Krillin's like, there might be a way. And I was like, brilliant. They're not dead. Awesome. Piccolo's coming back. So happy. I fucking love Piccolo. But that show is surprisingly awesome, Rich. I was like, I didn't think I was going to enjoy it at all, but it's got humor and action and consequences and cool fucking fights, Rich. Check it out, man. Like, seriously.
That sounds like my bag. I used to be into OVAs and manga stuff a lot back in the 90s and early 2000s when they still released that stuff in the West properly. But never watched Dragon Ball. Maybe I'll give it a go.
That was me as well. I mean, I've dabbled in anime. Obviously, where I work and stuff, I have to have at least a workable knowledge of a lot of the titles. Yeah. But I've never really committed to something. And I'm like, all right, I'm gonna go for this with Dragon Ball, at least until I get fed up with it. And hopefully I won't, because there's a lot of it. But, you know, I'm like, I'm gonna jump on board. This is a good excuse. The game came out. You know, people are talking about it. Let's actually get in there. I mean, I'm probably like 20 years older than I would ideally be watching this for the first time.
It's great when you're a kid. How many episodes have you watched so far? How many episodes has it taken to get to where you were?
It's like 14 episodes, 15 episodes.
14, okay. So in the stand, I think it's about 26 episodes. The Saiyan Saga is 30 episodes long, I think.
Right.
So they've almost
cut a lot of stuff out. A lot of stuff gets cut
out of it, basically. It sounds, awesome. Seems like, if you're up to about 14 episodes. So
where are you watching this?
I bought some DVDs.
All right.
So there's no, it's not, I don't even know if it's on Crunchyroll. I didn't actually look, but I got a cheap DVDs. I don't think it's streamable. I didn't look on Crunchyroll, but it's not streamable on Netflix, Amazon, anything like that. Sadly.
Is it, are you watching it dubbed, Ben? Are you watching the American dub?
Yes, I'm watching the dub. I'm watching the dub. Yeah. I didn't feel like it was the kind of thing I needed to pick up all the nuances in a sub version. Call me crazy. And I actually quite like the voice acting. I really like the voice acting.
I like the American dub. It's my preferred way of watching it. I've watched the Japanese with subtitles and stuff, and it's pretty bonkers. But
this is interesting, though. Talking about Kai, it's a recut of DBZ cutting out half the fluff. Imagine how much good that would do for something like, I don't know, Daredevil or Defenders or half the Netflix shows. A cut that cut out half the fucking series and just brought it down to the actual salient points that were worth fucking watching. Instead of the indulgent runs we get on Netflix. I think they should consider doing that. Like the time saver cut for people that don't have 12 hours to waste on a mediocre fucking Marvel show. What do you think about that? Harsh?
Mm-hmm. No, some things go on too long. You can't have too much of a good thing, as they say.
You guys been watching any of the Winter Olympics?
No.
What?
I don't work at the TV company I used to anymore, so I can't watch TV all day. So I don't get to watch these things.
Man,
it's real sport, Ben. And you know
I am surprised, but it is. I put in my little thing here. It's the most video game sports. Like it's fucking snowboarding off a half pipe, and like snowboarding down a track like motocross style all together at the same time, just crashing and just like, and then you've got people throwing themselves down on their faces basically on a tin tray at 100 miles an hour down the fucking like crazy ice luge tracks, and then you've got these crazy mogul shit and mad jumping. It's literally video games the sports.
Are you sat there with a controller going A B A B A B?
You could.
Come on.
I mean, I've got massively this year. I've been jonesing for some competitive sport with F1 on break. It's back soon, though, Joel. Back so soon.
I know. All the cars were released last week, weren't they?
We won't get into that because Richard will fall asleep. But fair. It's boring to everybody but the people into it. But no, this is like, oh, man, this is just like pure competition. I've watched every snowboard event. Every single one, like the half pipe, the freestyle, the cross, I've watched. Oh, I've just been loving it. And then the equivalents in skiing as well. I haven't been watching the boring shit like curling and ice skating. I don't care about that. I've watched some ice hockey, though. That's badass to watch, especially the women's final between America and Canada. That was amazing. I just think, it's just fucking, it's been brilliant. I've really, really liked it. Yeah, I've been on Eurosport a lot watching this shit. So it's been proper good. I can't believe you guys haven't checked it out. Hand in your man badges right now.
Where is it? I don't even know where it is.
Pyongyang, South Korea.
Oh, yeah, of course it is. How's that going down? Because they've got unified teams, haven't they?
Yeah, they've got a unified Korean team, which is fucking crazy cool. much props to them for working that one out, however they did that. And then they've got this other thing, which is the OAR, right, instead of Russia, because Russia was banned, right, because of all the doping, this national doping. And so OAR was the Olympic, something like athletes of Russia. Yeah, so these were Russian athletes that went through an even stringer tests on their doping, right, to get invited by the Olympic Committee to the Olympics. And then guess what? Bunch of them have gotten caught doping at the Olympics. Like, you fucking wankers. Brilliant. You're never going to be allowed in Olympics again, like, ever. Like, what are you doing? Like, and these are people wearing like t-shirts like, "We don't dope, we're sportsmen," got caught doping.
Suspended. That's brilliant.
Put their medals away. And it's just like, you guys are fucking, you're just like, what are you doing? Like,
actual villains.
As close as you get to in sports to proper villainy. No, it's amazing.
Do you not think it would be so much better if they had like a second tier at the Olympics and the Winter Olympics where you were allowed to dope, so they could just get all, you know, let's see how far doped humans can go.
Well, that's the thing. So, I want like a fully augmented Olympics. So it's like doped and cybernetically enhanced sports people. Like, as much money.
That's a slippery slope, that one, isn't it?
But can you imagine?
Race, isn't it? So you'd have Russia are basically dick dastardly doing whatever it takes.
Yeah.
So, wacky races, why not?
So you've got this augmented human who gets to the finish line first, but then he sort of detonates his, like, I don't know, like the you know, that sort of typhoon explosion from Mankind Divided. So he just fires off pinballs that kill everybody else. And he's like, "I am the ultimate Olympian." Like, so like, just no rules. Just go for it. You know what you're getting in for. Oh man, it's been really good, these Olympics, though. Fantastically well put on show as well. Much better than Brazil was last 2 years ago, which was a fucking train wreck. Pyongyang have got it locked down. Like, they've done a really good job with all of it. I don't think I've had any issues logistically. It's been awesome. Have you guys seen Black Panther?
Not yet. No.
Oh, okay, we'll put that off then, Joel.
No, I've not seen it.
Just me. All right, we'll leave that then. I was wondering if I noticed I was only the one that wrote that down. But I suppose we should move on to some video games. Now we've been talking for 25 minutes about Netflix and the Olympics. Mm-hmm. You guys are up for some moving on? I think we'll just get straight into it because it's kind of connected, this topic that we've kind of got for today and the major game that I looked at in the last couple of weeks, which was Kingdom Come Deliverance. Now, before we talk about the sort of the controversy and the awkwardness in many ways of covering this game that I found myself in, let me just get this out of the way, what it is. The Kingdom Come Deliverance is this historically set in the sort of Bohemian period of Central Europe. It's a medieval simulator. Now, unlike, say, an open world game like Skyrim, I thought it was very important to stress the simulator part of the description, because Skyrim is a fantasy set sort of open world RPG, and Kingdom Come Deliverance is an open world RPG. However, there is nothing fantasy about it. There's no dragons. I would say there's no magic, but there is sort of some contrivances that are kind of like magic, like healing potions and things like that. However, there's nothing like sort of casting spells and, you know, witches and warlocks, none of that. So you've just got sort of very gritty based, mostly melee based combat, some archery, but you'd avoid that because the system for it is terrible. However, the best thing about the game is the melee combat. It has sort of directional based attacks with swords and pikes and pole arms and different kinds of melee weapons, all of which behave differently. And then they all interact differently with the armor sets that you may be wearing, or that the enemy may be wearing. So if you attack plate armor on a big knight, you're likely going to get a deflection with your sword if you come in swinging at him. So you're going to have to think about different ways of attacking enemies. And that also applies to you and how you protect yourself. You know, you're going to use chainmail for blocking slashing attacks, or you're going to use plate mail for blocking piercing attacks and things like that. And depending on where it even is on your body, it will affect the attacks and how it comes in. So when I say simulator, I mean it. And beyond that, we're talking about, you know, a survival simulator aspect. So you have to stay fed. You have to sleep. You have to, you know, keep yourself clean. And depending on one of the crazier simulation aspects is depending on how muddy or bloody you are. You know, if you're you might intimidate a certain kind of person from your appearance, or you might get shunned and kicked out from, say, a highfalutin party if you showed up covered in blood and mud, which is fair, I suppose. Not on my drapes, but you know, it's things to that effect. I actually draw an equation in my review to, this is more like a farming simulator game, you know, one of the European developed farming simulator games, than it is Skyrim. It's the minutiae of living in a medieval world. And I know that is going to appeal to a lot of people. It doesn't appeal to me. It's just not fun. It becomes a case of managing systems rather than enjoying a game. And on top of it, what also made it difficult for me is that the main character you play as, you don't create your own character, you play as a character called Henry. And Henry is pretty dull. He gets better as it goes along. He starts off as like a blacksmith's son. You know, he comes from, you know, you have the hero's journey. It's all quite rote. And you interact with nobles and knights and you end up going on this, I wouldn't call it a quest. It's more like, you know, you're just trying to go from day to day, survive. And then there is some story elements that pick up, but it's all very cliche and very obvious. And the characterization isn't showy in any way because it's such a grounded setting. They've done quite a good job, I suppose, of normalistic voice acting, very sort of basic delivery, people that are quite believable, but sadly not interesting. And in a video game, I want some escapism. I want some fun. I want some excitement. I want to feel important. I don't want to feel just like a cog in a much wider machine, which for a large portion of Kingdom Come, you really do feel like that. Now, there is some cool quest in there. And it's so funny. I've scoured about and looked at some reviews and stuff in other places. And some of the elements people really focus on as awesome gameplay experiences to me are some of the most boring. Like, you could go and become a monk, like to infiltrate a monastery, you go and live as a monk, and you have to live as a monk for quite a long period of time. So you're getting up, you're going to seminary, you're going to pray for multiple hours of the day, you're going to pick vegetables from their garden, you're going to do more praying, and then you go to bed, and then you do it again.
Sorry, explain again. To me, why the hell would you want to infiltrate a monastery?
Well, there was a plot to do with like murders and shit happening from like the papal state and
all right, fair enough,
but really, yeah, why would you want to? You don't. You have to, and it's like, well, you know, it's a side quest, you don't have to, but it's not fun. This is the biggest problem I have with this game. At the end of the day, it wasn't fun. It's a farming simulator game. It's a Euro Truck Simulator game. It's not a Skyrim. It's not a Dragon Age. It's just, and it's not trying to be, and it's trying to fit a very specific niche. It's just, it's not a particularly wide appeal that it's going for. And that's great. You know, that's fine. That's beside all the controversy that I've had issue with as I've dug into the history of this game, where this game has come from, the development and those developing it. So have you guys, before we get into that, have you guys got any questions or anything you wanted to ask me about Kingdom Come specifically?
No, I watched quite a bit of footage about it because it's been, it's topping quite a few of the game charts, actually. If I look at Steam and stuff, it's like the most popular at the top and things. So lots of people are playing it. And yeah, so I watched some videos of it and I think I shared the same sentiment as you. I was like, oh, this, well, I was just like, my immediate response is, oh, it's a Skyrim, but without all the stuff that makes kind of the game fun, like,
yeah,
you know, caves and dwarves and loots and dragons and just that fantasy escapism that you know, reality sucks. So you kind of want to go and find another fantasy to go and immerse yourself in and stuff. And yeah, why would I want to go and immerse myself in a reality of a medieval world 400 years ago? And yeah, the other big thing that I'm sure you'll probably get to it is the bugs, basically. I've seen lots of people complaining about not being able to finish quests. If you go to certain towns before you're supposed to, it can bug out the game badly and stuff like that. So,
oh yeah, there's millions. I mean, but in a way it wasn't, it was almost not something I necessarily wanted to harp on about too much, because you expect a level of jank from a game that's the first product released by a developer with this huge ambition. And I don't penalize games for really, when I look at a lot of indie games for BXB, and I try not to be too harsh on them when it's like they're shooting really, really above their belts. They're aiming really high, going for the moon. And if they don't quite make it, it's like, but I can see what you were trying to do, you know? But this is one of the worst. I mean, because the scope is so large. There are multiple quests you can't finish due to bugs. There's bad AI everywhere. There's bad pathfinding. There's textures not loading. There's characters not loading. And it's not a server-based game. I had these problems, I can remember the last time, big time, with ESO when it first came out. But that was a lot of server-based issues. But that's not what this is. There was a lot of confusion over the patches on Xbox especially, which is what I was reviewing it on. So I actually held off waiting for this day one patch, which a week later still hadn't come out, we think. But maybe it did, because the developers are really bad at communicating to everyone what's going on. So there was just, well, the developers have got problems with communication in many ways. And that was just another example of them not really being able to get a handle on this is a major release. We're doing it simultaneously across multiple platforms. And they didn't really understand how Xbox, for example, did things differently to PlayStation and how that's all different to PC. So everything has just been a complete confusing mess of what's packs, what's been patched, what's been fixed. Because I wanted to play a day one patch version because supposedly the day one patch fixed a lot of the bugs. So I wanted to give that a go because I think that's only fair. But I don't even know if I was able to, you know, and I ended up in the, after a week later, I was like, well, I'm going to have to put something out for this. So, you know, I ended up doing my review based on, you know, as always, my own personal experience. And I imagine there's going to be a lot of players that are going to defend the Kingdom Come because this is the thing they've always wanted. So they'll get it and they will, you know, ignore a lot of the faults because they desperately want this to be good. Mm-hmm. And then there's also going to be a lot of players, I imagine, who are really, really disappointed because they thought they were going to get a Skyrim type game and didn't. And it's instead this incredibly dour, just joyless experience for the most part. Anything you wanted to ask, Rich?
I don't know. I think I've just got a hang up on this praying idea. How does that work? How does some of these interactions work? Is it like
it's just a lot of press? It's just a lot of minute kind of busybody work. I mean, there's a lot of that in this game. The way they tutorialize it is so bad. I show it in my video. Whenever a new experience, a new thing you have to use a system sort of appears, you get literally the game pauses, the screen goes dark, and then it fills the screen with text explaining what you have to do.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Oh, and then, no. And there's just screens of that. Man. That's how the game is tutorialized. Not in let's do it together, but in a this is what you've got to do kind of way. And it's just, oh, it's so bad. It's just so lazy. And I found myself, you can thankfully go back and look at these screens because you're going to need to, because every system in this game is overly complicated. And I was constantly going back and going, so when I'm haggling, I have to do this, and that bar means that, and this thing means that. And then I'm lock picking. It's a totally different lock picking system and a haggling system to any other game for some reason. And so you're like, oh, right. So now I have to, oh, that's kind of counterintuitive. Oh, okay. Right. So I've got to do it that way. And it's just a mess. Like, it's so much ambition, but it just has not come together in any cohesive way. Like I've said, in my review, besides all the bullshit that this dude comes out of his mouth, this Gamergate supporting asshole, that's the lead designer, at Warhorse on Kingdom Come Deliverance. Besides what, I'm just trying to find his name. I've looked it up before, but now I can't find it. I'm looking at an article. Daniel Vavra or Vavra. Besides what he says and how he's a reprehensible human being that deserves to burn in the fires of Hades, the game is just shit. Didn't enjoy it. Broken mess. Wait for 12 patches. Get it when it's £10. That kind of thing. Like, it's just not good. But it made me start thinking about creators with reprehensible morals and ethics. And can we still enjoy, should we still enjoy in the 2018... the art, the entertainment that they produce? Many people would say, I just want to enjoy my thing. And I've had a bunch of arguments with this over the last few weeks as I've been raising this in various places online. You know, I just want to enjoy my thing. I don't care about the people and the politics behind it. I don't need to care about that. I just want to enjoy the art, the entertainment. You know, that's all it is. It's escapism for me. And I've been wrestling with that a little bit because I can think of a few examples of books that and films and stuff that I've loved over the years. And then later on, found out about the writers or the directors or whatever behind them, which has greatly then affected my ability to enjoy that product going forward. One of my big examples of that is Orson Scott Card and Ender's Game. I loved that novel as a kid growing up. That was a brilliant sci-fi book. And then you find out that Orson Scott Card is basically the worst person. Like, absolute homophobe, religious nutcase, proper scumbag. And you're like, all right, well, I can't. And there's a problem with a lot of science fiction from the 50s and the 60s that actually has that, where a lot of the type of people writing that stuff were often very sexist, were often very racist. And one of the biggest thing people are saying at Kingdom Come Deliverance, right? This is the big thing, talking about race. Where are all the black people? And Daniel says, in his defense, there were no black people in Europe at this time.
Okay.
And that's history, he says. That's historical. And we're trying to make an historical simulator that there are no black people in Kingdom Come Deliverance. So, Daniel, what about the really strange sort of sexualized... The women in this game have basically two roles, servants and sluts, or servant sluts. They do sometimes come together. It's like, well, women, in history,
there were no non-sluts in
that's what he would say back in historical medieval Europe. Yeah. Women were kept down, and that's the roles they served. And he would say that, you know. Yeah. And look, to a degree, he's kind of right. I mean, obviously, women's rights back then were terrible, and obviously, there were a lot less black people in Europe at that time. However, this is a game coming out in 2018, right? If you can put healing potions in your historically accurate video game, can you not put a couple of black characters in, or maybe make a strong female one? I mean, isn't... See what I'm saying? That's an interesting debate, isn't it? That's a difficult question.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, he's gone as far as walls of fucking texts in a land where people can't read. So, yeah.
The whole reading thing comes up a bunch, actually, in the game. Yeah, a lot of nobles that can't read, and you have some interesting interactions with them because of that. But exactly. Like, if you're going to break the rules one way, shouldn't you break the rules the other way because you're making a fucking video game in 2018?
Yeah.
You're not making a video game in 1406. Do you know what I mean? You know. So how do you guys feel about this? Are there any creators you've ever found out retroactively that are really, you know, that are awful people that have really hurt your enjoyment of something? And what do you think about us divorcing these things, or should we be taking them as one?
It's difficult, isn't it? I mean, you kind of have to look at it on a case-by-case basis. I think in this game, from what you're saying, it seems to be expressed in the art rather than just something you know about the creator. So if it has that kind of effect on the product itself, sure, it's gonna dictate whether you can enjoy it or the extent to which you can enjoy it. If you look at that and think, well, this is telling me all women are sluts, yeah, I'm not going to get that much out of that game. Similar to GTA, I think we've talked about that before, where it's hard for us to engage with Grand Theft Auto on a narrative level because all of the characters are just so awful. I don't know if that says anything about the people that made the game, but as a product, I cannot get on board with it. It's just nothing there for me to really get into.
That's an interesting one you brought up there, because I think the characters in GTA are awful because they're meant to be, because it's satire. And it's meant to be commentary, isn't it? That's a lot of the time GTA is meant to be.
It's meant to be, but to me...
But that's not Kingdom Come.
It's
Kingdom Come is
on the nose.
Yeah, it's 100% saying, nope, this is history.
Mm.
This is what things were like. And it's like, sure, but 2018. I mean, it wouldn't have been hard for you to make, you know... One of the things is that the historical fact, there were Moors in Europe in this
period,
right?
It's not even history. There were black people in Europe.
Yes. Yes. So, I mean, the GTA, have you ever had any particular example where you found out about a creator, Richard? Because there's a few, isn't there? I mean, I can think of, like, Orson Scott Card always comes to mind for me. But what was the paedophile director that got, can never go back to the US because he got convicted of paedophilia, for example? I'm trying to remember who that director is as well, but neither of you guys remember that?
Oh, yes, I know who you mean. I've forgotten his name now.
But that's great example on my part there, not being able to remember his name. But so, Joel, you've been quiet. You obviously look like you're in a lot of thought about this.
Yeah.
Polanski, yes, thank you.
I'm trying to think. Most interesting one is, we're black people in Europe. I'm just trying to think. I can imagine there wouldn't be many. I don't know. The problem is, I don't know. I'm really curious, actually, what factually or, well, the factual histories back then sort of so poorly documented. I guess for a lot of it, it's how historians generally interpret it and agree on a consensus, I guess. I'm just wondering what actually the biggest consensus is for that, actually. I don't know. So that's why I'm...
But, I mean, it's almost irrelevant, isn't it? It's almost irrelevant. And the argument would be, just because maybe that's true or mostly true, it doesn't matter.
Well,
because this
know.
Has been made because if you've yeah, already got non-historical elements in your game, then why can't you put in a character, a sympathetic character? There are kind of dark-skinned people, but they're all the enemies in this game. They're all kind of the bloodthirsty, rape and pillaging bad guys.
What do you think?
You don't really interact with.
Do you think that it would need all art has to have sort of representative faces? Then do you think?
No, I don't. I wouldn't want to go that far because that's weird. Then you get into tick box territory, and
well,
it's kind of like that's then you're not creating something true to your outlook. But you also have to remember that it's a little bit different for this guy because he's drawn at this attention on himself because of his outspoken kind of Gamergate sort of hate speech kind of stuff that this Daniel guy has been doing for multiple years now. So he's brought this magnifying glass upon himself.
The issue is not that he's left black people out of the game necessarily. It's that he's
in general.
He's got particular motives for doing that other than the historical.
Yeah. That's what it would definitely indicate. Yes. That he's coming from a place of hate in a lot of this. Yes. This is a guy. He's a big black metal fan, you know, and he wears like t-shirts. I can't remember which band it was. I was looking at some of these articles and pictures of his who he supports, and he's wearing a t-shirt with this guy at this band that had the lead singer got convicted of murdering a black person in a race crime. So it's kind of like, okay, yeah, not a good person. I think it's fair to say, you know, or the other argument is ignorance, isn't it? It's just like, well, I just like what I like. I just like what I like, and I don't realize these things. I don't understand that, you know. I just like Ender's Game. I didn't know that Orson Scott Card's a horrible homophobe, you know. That's but then you find out, and if you find out about that stuff and then you still enjoy something, does it make you culpable? And it's like, does it put you on the other level?
That's one step beyond, because up until now we've been talking about how much we would enjoy the product knowing what we know about the creator, but if you then have
if you actively support Orson Scott Card, I keep using this example, after knowing the fact, you know, shout his praises, knowing what he's like as an individual.
Yeah.
Doesn't that make you culpable? Doesn't that put you on? Doesn't that say you're to a degree agreeing with the viewpoints of that creator?
I don't know. I'm quite torn on this. And
it's tricky. It's tricky. And I'm playing devil's advocate, obviously. I'm not saying necessarily this is how I feel, but I think
on this subject, I go back to, I suppose one of the things I go back to is WWE, because we know Vince McMahon's a bit of a douche.
He's a douche, but I don't think he has a lot of, like, he's not racist. He's not necessarily sexist. He's just a bit morally.
He's put a lot of money into the Trump campaign, for example.
Yeah, that's fair.
So on that count, you've got to say he's a bit of a dirtbag, right? But
yeah, but I mean, how many Americans voted for Trump? I mean, it's difficult, isn't it? They voted for that president. So are they all equally scumbags for doing that? Or did they just make a mistake?
Well, they made a mistake.
Did Trump make a mistake? Did Vat McMahon make a mistake? You know what I mean? It's like,
no, I don't believe that the equivalence is there to people who were sort of convinced to vote for a person and someone who should be more informed and someone who's making an active choice to invest in that person and their policies, possibly for self-interest.
What were his motivations? Businessman
that will benefit from Trump's tax policies. But I'm getting slightly aside from my point is that I don't like who Vince McMahon is or some of the things that he represents, but the product that he creates really isn't anything to do with that. And if I can celebrate something positive that someone makes and divorce that from the bad side of their character, to me, that's encouraging them to identify with the good things that they can do. I don't want to diminish the good things that people produce and just eternally tar them with this brush that you are the bad thing that is really just one facet of your character. I don't think that's constructive.
So in 2018, right, we've got myriads of entertainment, right? We have 200 TV shows a day on Netflix, streamable. We have thousands of books accessible electronically, millions of books accessible electronically, physically, hundreds of video games all the time. There's a deluge of entertainment. So I think what it means to me is that if you find a piece of entertainment that's being created by someone that you don't agree with, just move on to something else. There's so much to choose from. Why stick with that thing when you know about that person who's created it, or a key person in the team that's created it that maybe has some, you know, you have issues with personally? You know, just move on to something else. You don't have to sit there and endure it. I mean, look, you know, the YouTube stuff is coming up more and more, like Logan Paul and all that stuff. You know, you could almost, you know, in your argument there, what you were saying about, because they did something good, you know, you can divorce the good from the bad almost. Well, yeah. Logan Paul has done like donations and stuff, and he makes sometimes very socially aware videos where he apologizes or he draws attention to issues that need attention, you know, using his big user base for that. But then on the other hand, he shoots videos of a man committing suicide and says and that's entertainment.
His thing, his business is himself. You know, it's not just an external product that you can enjoy on its own merits. It's about
kind of like Donald Trump. Yeah.
And if I'm watching wrestling, it's not because I want to see Vince McMahon come out. When he does,
it's cool.
He's funny, whatever. That's great. He plays a character, really. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm not watching it for him. So what he's created, I enjoy. That doesn't mean I associate with anything that he personally believes or represents.
But, I mean, it's like, for me, it's like I wouldn't probably go out of my way to watch a film with Mel Gibson in it now or Bruce Willis, considering what I've learned about those people.
It's definitely a detractor, isn't it? You see Bruce Willis, you see Mel Gibson on a poster and you think, well, maybe not. And then you'll watch it and you'll probably quite enjoy it.
When it's on Netflix.
Yeah. But
it is difficult. There is no right answer to this. There is no wrong answer to this. Joel, I feel like you're really just fighting with it in your brain right now because you've gone very quiet.
If I go back to your example about Ender's Game, right? You bought the book and you enjoyed it, but how could you reasonably have known before that point?
When I was 10 or whatever. Yeah. I had no idea. None. Yeah.
And then,
well, if you didn't know, then it's clearly not something that's carried across into his art, is it?
Yeah. It wasn't literally an Ender's Game that they were sort of like, oh, yeah, and once we finish this war, we're just going to go wipe out this planet of homosexuals. you know, yeah. And then now that you did know, if you hadn't read Ender's Game and it was a book that was perhaps on your list, for example, or the film was on your Netflix list, you could perhaps now choose based on that information that you didn't want to watch it because of those reasons.
Yes.
Or if you really want to get him back, just write B on the front of his book.
Oh god, and then my bit about the planet at the end might make sense. God.
I mean, yeah, I think that's what it all comes down to the end of the day now, isn't it? It's choice. We have so much to choose from that you don't have to stick with the stuff that causes you any issues. And I think it's fair to say, even though we've all got fairly strong views on this, there'll be times, because we're human, there'll be times when you might compromise, where you might maybe watch something that you know maybe there's someone in this that is not great, but oh god, you really wanted to see it, or I really wanted to play it. You know what I mean? And it's like, and you're gonna do it because we're human and no one's perfect. And I think it's silly to believe. Look, and if there are probably people out there who will always stick to those convictions and be super, super strong. And I respect that. I respect that a great deal from any aspect, you know, from the left, from the right, whatever. But I think that's the extreme minority. Most people will compromise in somewhere and usually sit somewhere in the middle on these things.
I think there's less value to having an absolutism in your principles anyway. I think you've got to assess things constantly to know that your principles have a real value in the circumstances that you're in and the time that you're in. Things change.
So I'd say, I think, you know, maybe don't play Kingdom Come Deliverance because of who made it or one of the designers. It's a big team as well. There's 150 people working on it. Maybe don't play Kingdom Come Deliverance because it's just not very good.
Yeah, you've got an easy out there. If it's a bad game, it's a bad game.
Not necessarily the hill you have to die on this time. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So if we find out the developers behind The Last of Us 2, are actually going out and shooting minorities just for fun on the weekend, that will be a more difficult decision to make because I'm sure The Last of Us 2 is going to be very good. Richard, I'm going to talk to you about Portal Knights.
Yeah, that's all right, that. I've been playing that on Switch for the past week or so, and it's pretty much what I thought it would be, which is a Minecraft clone, but with its own twist. So Minecraft, everyone knows what Minecraft is, don't they? I don't need to explain it. Mm-hmm. But the general essence of Minecraft, where you can just kind of do anything you want whenever, and there's no real structure there. Portal Knights tries to switch that on its head a bit and gives you a Minecraft experience. So you're a character in a block-built world, but with actual objectives. The world is a lot smaller than you would expect from Minecraft. It's a lot more detailed, so it's got that graphic up-res where your character is more detailed, customizable, and you've got recognizable things in the landscape rather than just pixelated blocks. It looks a lot nicer than your Minecraft experience. And it goes out of its way to give you things to do. Nothing particularly complicated, but it's always flashing up messages like, go here and try and uncover this chest that's in this tomb, or talk to this character and find some of these items to give to him. And it's, you know, it's nothing complicated, usual sort of fetch quest stuff or exploration missions. But it gives you sort of a through line to, you know what to do next. And Frank, shut up.
I thought that was your belly.
My dog asking for biscuits. Yeah, so it gives you this through line to, you know, where to go next, and always give you something to do rather than the Minecraft experience of, well, what now? Because there's just so much space in Minecraft. You don't know whether to start building where you are, find somewhere else to set up, start digging a mine. And that's great for what it is. I'm not going to diss Minecraft for that. It's a great game still. But Portal Knights offers you just a bit more of a focused experience. Rather than just one world that you're dumped into, it dumps you into a much smaller environment. And the portals, from the title, there's a portal in that opening area that takes you to another area of a similar size. And they're all procedurally generated, I think. And each one has specific things that you have to do, and then you move on to the next one. It's a little bit like Lego Worlds, except it all works properly. And it's got kind of a charming Rare vibe to it. So the soundtrack has very much the flavor of Banjo-Kazooie, that sort of thing. And it just works really well. So the combat's quite nice as well. It's got Zelda style Z trigger lock on mechanics. So you lock onto enemies and just hold a fire button to shoot them with your arrows, or you can use swords. And it's multiplayer as well. So you can have up to four people working in these environments as you would with Minecraft. So yeah, I think in summary, if you want sort of like a Minecraft experience with better graphics and more of a directed experience, this is for you.
Yeah, I played it briefly on Xbox around the time it came out on that platform, I remember, and I thought, oh yeah, that's got a fun look to it. Like, it's nice. It's quite got a nice cartoony style that definitely sets it apart from Minecraft, and it feels more like a proper game than Minecraft. I mean, I know Minecraft is almost the ultimate game now, but you know what I mean, though. It's got like there's a level of polish and presentation to it that sort of sets it apart a bit from Minecraft. I thought it had a lot of promise.
The key thing is it has an objective. There's a purpose to it, rather
yeah,
than
that's what makes it feel maybe more like a traditional game to me, yeah, than just survive. What anything like specific about the Switch? I mean, is it good portable? Is it nice on the handheld, or are you playing it mostly on TV? And you know, how's it holding up?
I'm finding with most things on the Switch, I'm just playing in portable mode now. So if I've got my TV on, I'll put the Xbox on or something. I'm not finding very many reasons to play on a big screen on a Switch, because it just looks better on handheld as well.
Saying that, just quickly, I mean, we might talk about this more in a bit, but I'm finding Bayonetta a little bit hard to follow on the screen when it's that small.
Yeah, the action's a bit full on, isn't it? So
like I haven't played on a big screen yet, but I'm going to give that a go this week and see if that helps me out a little bit, because it's so crazy. Yeah. We'll talk about that in a bit. But yeah, Portal Knights, you have full review coming soon?
Yeah, you'll have that this weekend.
Exciting. Looking forward to it. Joel's been busy. He's been playing a whole bunch of games. First one I wanted to touch on is because of your personal connection to this. I know, I remember you telling me, I do mountain biking back in the day, Joel told me, and I've done proper like crazy, you know, down ridiculously steep slopes on ridiculously narrow track mountain biking. And I was like, right, Descenders came in on PC. And I was like, Joel, this is for you. This is 100% for you. And it's coming to game preview soon on Xbox as well. So I might check it out myself then. But tell us about Descenders on PC.
So it's a downhill kind of mountain biking game. It's just in early access at the moment. And it's built around kind of, I think that what they've really invested their time in is this sort of bike physics and handling and the feel of the bike. I was playing it with a controller on the PC, and sort of the left stick does your sort of steering when you're in the air. You use that to sort of do flips and jumps and backflips and stuff. But the right stick you use to move your like the rider, just subtly move your weight around the bike. So when you're coming into sort of berms and things, and you can sort of like throw yourself in and hit right on the right stick to shift your weight, so you can do really tight turns and hold your speed and all that kind of stuff. So at its foundation, it's got this really cool, solid sort of control scheme and bike physics and things. And then they've kind of wrapped it up in a world that takes you through, they've got four areas you go to. One's like a kind of forest, one's sort of more open plains, one's sort of a desert style canyon, and the other sort of a snow-capped peaked mountain. And throughout these levels, they procedurally generate about five, or you can do as many stages as you like, essentially. I think there's up to like 12 per area. Yeah, you go down these procedurally generated stages, basically, and they're kind of short. You've just got to get to the end. You can get sort of reputation points by doing stunts and going fast and sort of skimming past objects quite close and things like that. It's generally quite fun. I enjoyed playing it. The only thing I really didn't necessarily like too much about it was actually what I think the game would be a lot better with is a more kind of open environment. So you've got the really good solid bike physics and stuff. I'd just like it to be a bit more freeform, perhaps. So these procedurally generated tracks are linear. Literally, you've just got the one track, you go down it. There's no sort of branching or different routes to try. I think having sort of a more fixed, we built one canyon level and here is about 20 or 30 different routes. You sort of start at the top and you can pick and plot your way down basically to the bottom, and routes changing complexity and things like that, and not having to worry about, they have this like live, so you have like five lives and you get, each time you stack or bail, you lose a life. Sometimes if you stack really badly, you'll lose two because it's, you know, they sort of deeming like, oh, you back stacked really badly, so your health goes down. And that's kind of a bit frustrating. I think I said in my review, imagine playing sort of Tony Hawk's Skater with lives. It would somewhat suck a bit. It'd be nice if they could relax those things or add different game modes. Now it's in early access, and you know, hopefully they're going to start listening for feedback and start trying to add the newer bits to it. I was quite intrigued. I had quite a bit of fun with it. Actually, I played it quite a lot. Quite high on the leaderboards as well, actually, with my reputation points. And I think that was by the virtue of not many other people actually being on there, to be fair, rather than me being incredibly skillful. But yeah, it was it's good. I'll be keeping an eye on it. I'm curious to see where it goes as they try and sculpt it into a gold release, basically. And hopefully they'll add a few more freeform game modes, because I think it's got, at its root, it's got the core, it's got the bike handling and the physics, which are good. It just now needs more sort of sandbox environments to allow you to exploit and have fun with those. And I think if they take that on board and do that, then yeah, I think they've got something that's, it'll certainly appeal to the niche of mountain bikers, and hopefully it'll be quite a fun game for those who don't do mountain biking, actually.
Yeah, well, I was gonna say, it's not, you're not like you're making a game just for the downhill mountain bikers, are you? Because there can't be many of those. Not really, not in the greater scheme of things. However, it does feel like it's a sport that perhaps has been barely ever utilized, like as a video game adaptation. I can't really think of any others. So I think just for that alone, that's quite exciting. But I mean, you know, obviously as someone who does it, you think it mostly gets things like the handling and the,
yeah, I was quite, I found it, I found it felt quite nice and realistic. It worked. It seemed to have captured the essence of the sport, and it made it accessible enough for a video game. It's fun. It's not too difficult. And there is sort of nuances to the controls. You don't have to move your weight around, for example. You can just rely on braking, although braking's dangerous because when you go downhill, you lock up, you lose the ability to steer. So you've got to be really, you know, yeah, it's done really well.
Did you say you do tricks though?
Yes, you can. So there are ramps and things, and you can do backwards.
You don't do that in downhill, though, do you?
People do. Have you ever watched?
Do they do tricks?
Yeah, watch some of the Red Bull stuff. There's the Red Bull downhill championship.
I just thought it was a race. I didn't realize there was a trick element.
Different formats to it. You get some of them are racing. Some of them are more stunt based. So you do, and some of them are kind of a combination of both. But yeah, Red Bull kind of run a series at the extremity, which is literally. I just don't know how people can ride down some of that stuff, man. It's nuts. They'll do like 2,000 feet or so of descent in about 30 seconds. It's insane.
What?
Whilst doing massive stunts and things. Here, I'm gonna. This isn't gonna really benefit
for the listeners.
Not for the listeners. I was gonna stick a photo on the review, but that's just a link. That's me there doing.
Oh shit! That's you. Yeah, it's a picture of you doing it. It's fucking. Yeah. Oh wow! Look at that. That's cool, man. Look at that. Legit. We've got photographic evidence that he really does this shit. So it's coming from a place of expertise, much like my Division 3 football career when I was in FIFA.
There's a few more of me here at various things. Oh,
he's just pimping us out now. This plays so well.
I know. No idea.
Let's stop doing that. Right. Anyway. Cool. Keep an eye on it. Definitely keep us updated when you see. Progress being made with the builds and stuff. Keep an eye on it. You know, I'm not crazy, but like if there's something big that happens to it, I'll be really curious to hear if some of the features that you've requested sort of start appearing. Hopefully they will. Right. I'm going to talk about The Fall Part 2.
Yay!
I know Rich has been waiting to hear about this. The Fall Part 2 : Unbound. Now, I beat this game in about 2 sittings. And I won't lie, I tried to do as much of it as possible without using the walkthrough that was provided by the developer. However, I definitely used it. Because, you know, when you're trying to get a review out for release, you know, hit embargo, just slamming your head against some of the sometimes quite difficult puzzles, you know, for hours isn't necessarily helpful when, you know, you want to just see what comes next and what the story is and stuff like that. God, how do I talk about this without massive spoilers? This is really tricky. So much of The Fall. If you've not played the first Fall, I highly, 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 highly recommend you go back and buy it. And I do believe right now on Xbox, you can get both of them together in a bundle for like £7 off nearly. Like something, it nearly breaks it down to about the price of the second one by itself. So if you haven't played The Fall and you know, and you're thinking about it, buy this bundle, then you can get straight into part two. Because this game was originally envisioned as sort of an episodic thing, but it was a hell of a long time between episodes. So it's kind of almost come out as a sequel. And I think that they had to go back to crowdfunding for the second one. I believe they'll probably have to do the same for the third one. But boy, oh boy. Now, this is what often happens with games like this and films and everything. The first thing comes out, you know, they've got an overarching idea that they want it to be a trilogy, right? But they don't know if it's going to be popular enough. So the first one comes out, it does really well. It's really well regarded, like won a lot of narrative awards the year it came out for its story. But it has quite a good resolution to it at the end. But it's done well, so number two is going to happen. So when two happens, it has to think of where to take the story. And I think they do a really good job, and it's a really interesting hook about where the story is taken into. But it feels very much, by the time you get to the end of two, it feels very much like a part two in a series. And all I can say is, goddamn, if they don't get a third one, if they don't make a third one, I'm going to be super pissed because I really, really, really want to know what happens and where it all ends up at the end of this sort of trilogy of games. Because the Fall Part Two very much is a extension and continuation of Arid's story from the first game. However, it's taken in a very different direction because you get 3 new playable characters in this game. And I really don't want to spoil. I mean, there's like a service bot, like a butler bot, as I'll call him. There's like a sex worker bot robot. And then there's this drone bot who is also like a Ronin samurai type. And they all have very different characters, and how they interact with Arid is all very different. And then later on in the game, there's some interesting mechanics that are introduced with how they interact with each other, even though they're in very different places in the game. And that becomes a big kind of interesting kind of puzzle element to how you can actually solve things, because you can look at the environments from the different perspectives. For example, you'll be in the butler's environment, which is like this rundown mansion, right? But you can then look at it from the sex bot's perspective, and you'll see things and understand things in ways that you wouldn't have if you'd only looked at it as the butler. I'm trying to be vague. However, that plays a big part in the sort of the puzzles, and it plays a big part in the story as well. Arid starts off this, right, so the end of the first game, again, I don't want to spoil the first game because it's so good. So you need to play the first game. So the start, you know, Arid's in a bit of a spot of bother at the beginning of the second game, shall we say. And how she deals with that and how she kind of realigns her own sort of self-governing protocols as an AI is fascinating, and what that means for her character. I loved where it took the themes of self, the themes of self-determination, the themes of what it means to be a person, what it means to be conscious, what it means to be human. I love all of that. This is what easily the strongest part of this game. I didn't love the expansion in the combat. There are parts in this game where you're kind of in cyberspace, right? Mm-hmm. And that's where you often get a lot of this combat fighting, kind of like amorphous black blobs, which have these very rigid attack patterns. And the combat in the Fall was never great. Thankfully, it was quite rare. But there's a lot more combat in the Fall 2. And while never that difficult, and there's even an easy mode for it as well, which basically means enemies all take half as much damage before you can finish them off, which I switched to pretty quickly just because there's no reason to make that combat difficult or stay in it any longer than you have to. And you just have to get through these sections. I just don't know why. One of the criticisms I bring up in review is that the game feels a bit padded. It's a longer experience than the first game, and it feels, while obviously it's trying to tell these different stories, so you've got Arid's story and then the three other characters' stories, so there's a lot more narrative in here, which is one of the reasons it's longer. And that's not necessarily a problem, but the combat sections just felt kind of unnecessary. And there is other combat in the game, which I actually really liked. So when you play as the drone, the samurai character, he does this melee combat, which is one-finger death punch combat, like 100% lifted from the Xbox indie game One-Finger Death Punch. Did you guys play One-Finger Death Punch?
No.
No.
Fucking amazing combat game. So basically, it's 2D. You're sort of on a plane. The enemies rush at you from either side, and you're hitting either, B and X on the controller to strike either left or right. So it's timing based. And then the enemies will vary up. Some will take two hits. Some will teleport to the other side of you. So it's all just about stringing together as many combos as possible quickly to get as high a score as possible. And that combat is 100% One Finger Death Punch put in the Fall Part 2. It's weird that it's there, but that combat's fun, easier to do. And just a lot more engaging than the Arid combat with your gun and stuff, which just feels a little bit clunky. And hit detection can be an issue and unnecessary for the most part. The other thing, of course, with how you investigate things in the Fall Part 2 is exactly the same as it is in Part 1. So you shine your light, your torch thing out, and it goes over points of interest, which you can then interact with and investigate. And it's this interesting mixture of like side-scrolling adventure game with some combat in there and jumping stuff as well in those combat sections, which isn't great. Mobility has never felt brilliant in this game, but thankfully the story, the narrative, the characters, that's why you're there, and that's what will pull you through. And much like old school adventure games at times, the puzzles can be proper weird and somewhat arbitrary at times, I guess, and a little bit obfuscating some of the stuff, like that thing's meant to interact with that thing. Oh, but it does, but in a way I would never have thought of.
That's from the original game, though. That's yes. Deliberate, isn't it?
Yes. No, it's an homage. It's an old school adventure game style puzzle.
Well, more than that, the puzzles in there are obscure for the specific reason that you're meant to be thinking from a machine's perspective.
Yeah,
so they're absolutely there's still more logical. Of
that. There's early on. So the first one of these characters you meet is the butler character, and he has a very set routine for managing this rundown mansion. And you have to kind of work within his parameters that restrict his, you know, his programming to actually solve puzzles and break him out of his routine. You know, and the same thing for the sex worker. Her main thing is she has been programmed to make everybody happy. So you have to sort of work within it. And then there's the drone who desperately thinks he's unique, but is yet one of a million other robots who are identical to him. So it's all about working within that. And obviously, you like you said, in the first game, it was just Arid's parameters. Mm-hmm. And in this game, it's three other characters, very different parameters, but all of which help you explore Arid's personality and her evolution throughout this game. And then we get to the brilliant conclusion, which makes me desperately want number three. Yeah. Any questions, Richard? I know you were pretty hyped for this. Anything you want to know?
No, I don't want to play anything. Yeah, I just want to play it. Yeah, I just want to reiterate your sentiments for the first game. If anyone who hasn't played it, they absolutely must.
Joel, have you played the first one?
No, I'll add it to my.
There's a double pack on Xbox right now for both the games at like £7 off. Basically, the price of just one of the games by itself.
Part two is like £12. You can get it with the first one for 13 and a few pence.
Cool. So I'll check that out in a minute. I just wanted to comment on his awesome review video.
It's terrible, isn't it? You can't see any of it. Like, I don't know what happened.
Like literally black, and you could just see sort of blue dots moving around.
I don't know. I actually say in my review, right at the top of the review, I'm like, I'm so sorry. This video capture has gone horribly wrong. I think what it was when I was watching it on my, I captured all the footage on my 4K TV, and I had to bump the brightness down in game because it was way too bright. And I think that massively took the brightness down on the capture as well. And maybe it could have been something that's, I think it's been patched since then as well, because I was playing pre-release. So yeah, there's some weird shit's happened there. It's a fucking terrible review. So it's basically just don't watch it. Just listen to me, or just listen to this, because the review is basically unwatchable. You can barely see anything. Not my finest hour, but who cares? It's about the story anyway.
Avoiding spoilers, let's say.
Yeah, that's it. Why don't I think of that, Richard? I should have said that in the review. That'd be a smart way out of that. I was too damn honest. You know, ethics in video games, you know, it's all about Gamergate again. But yeah, play this game, Rich. I'd be really curious to see what you think. I don't think it's necessarily as good as the first game, because the first game is a very tight, very, very well-constructed, small experience with a distinct beginning, middle, and end. However, there's still some great twists.
Apart from the combat, though, right? So it's weird that they've expanded.
Doubled down on it, yeah. I don't understand that really at all. Why more was added of that? All I can think of, you know, interestingly, how I got this code, I just sent an email to them. I actually spoke to the guy who runs the company who gave me the review code. I should ask him, you know, is your combat designer like just you're really tight with him or something and you wanted to give him something to do? Like, what were you just like, all right, Bill, you know, I know you want to put more combat in this game. Go on. All right, fine. Do it. Yeah. Go on. Shut up. Just go on with it. I am curious as to why there's more of it, because it was easily the worst part of the first one. So, and I think it's not like people didn't tell them that either when that game came out. Like everybody said that about the game. So
it doesn't need it, because it's essentially a point and click adventure, isn't it? No one came out of Monkey Island thinking, I wish those sword fights were actually like action sequences.
The first game was like 2 or 3 hours long. Yeah.
Yeah, something like that.
This one is more like 6 or 7, I'd say. Right. Like it's definitely longer. I played it pretty hardcore straight through, so it's hard to say for sure. But I for the most part though, I really enjoyed it. So definitely worth checking out. The stuff they come up with, the writer in this game and stuff, so inventive and like
really clever. Yeah.
Yeah. The structuring of puzzles and perspectives and the whole programming thing and where they take Arid and stuff. No, it was really, really good. Okay. Back to Joel and a little game we both played actually, because I played it with Joel to help him with his review, which was Marooners.
Yeah. It's just a party game. It's like 25 or so mini games. It's kind of charmingly presented with cute little Viking-y characters and aliens, and you can choose helmets and you can choose cosmetic weapons, which actually make no difference to stats or anything. And yeah, you just go through a sequence of party games, basically trying to collect as much treasure as you want. The goal isn't necessarily to win the party games; it's just to collect as much treasure as you go through them as you can. And obviously, surviving in the game allows you to get more treasure. Now, the key twist to this game, and its USP really, is a mini game starts and you'll play a random amount of time. It may be 5 seconds, it may be 15 seconds, it may be 30 seconds of this mini game, and then suddenly it will just suspend that mini game, bring you back up to the kind of the hub world, take you over to the next one and start the next one. And then the sequence keeps going, and you sort of pop around all these mini games, and then you'll suddenly be brought back to mid play where you were in one that you were playing before, and it will suddenly unpause and you just have to go from exactly where you are. So there's just constant context switching, basically, that goes on. And yeah, that was really fun. It really adds a sort of additional level of drama and to the game, really, because there's several times where it comes back and I'm sort of midway over jumping off a vanishing platform, and it's just like, and then just like, yeah, completely die because I'm not holding the joystick in the right direction anymore. And yeah, it's brilliant. And then even if you do die in the game, you just get to come, you're just shoved back in the game world as this little ghost, so you can continue to hit the other players. You can't collect treasure anymore, but you can just continue to screw your friends over. Yeah, it was charmingly entertaining and fun, and it's six player. So you can play it with up to six friends locally, and it would be great to play it like that. The AI was a bit wet. I played it single player, and it's just the AI is easy to beat. So this is, you really want to get the most out of this with friends. It's not a game to play by yourself, I'd say. But
me and you were playing it, Joel. As a party game. I think the biggest thing I can say is that within a couple of minutes, once we got the grasp of that switching thing, we knew what was happening. I was like, you bastard, you know. And that's the, you know, that kind of party game mentality came out very, very quickly, and we were really getting into it, and it was so much fun and charming and well put together. And just, it does exactly, I like the fact that, you know, you mentioned the multiplayer, but it's cool because you can have a mixture of six players, local and online. So you can have three people on your Xbox, and then you can matchmake in with another three people on the internet, or have AI or whatever. And you can, you know, that's cool. I mean, clearly there's some decent tech on the back end of this with, you know, the way the party system works. And then that game switching, you know, how you're basically pausing and resuming games in, you know, and keeping multiple states, you know, active behind the game you're playing. That's some pretty impressively done tech, I would say. I mean, that's couldn't be that easy to pull off. So I was quite impressed with the whole thing. I thought it was a really nice little package. And there's not loads of games like that available, is there, on the Xbox? So
I thought there's nothing I could really fault it for, really. I think it's good fun. I think just to get the most out of it, you probably need to play it, like you say, with some people you know, and fill it up with people you don't, and you'll have a good laugh with it. Yeah,
definitely more frenzied than Fusion Frenzy, I would say. So yeah, pick this up over the that OG Xbox game that's now on Xbox One, which still blows my mind. But yeah, I really dug it. More importantly though, I need to ask you about the game that you haven't quite put a review up for. It's a preview, isn't it? Yeah, it's not out.
Yeah, it's
but it looks so good.
Yeah,
this is by the developers of what was it? I said it. I told you when I gave it to you. I can't remember now. Oh, it's like a developer that did a game. It's really good. I'm going to have to look that up now. But tell them about Leisure League while I look up the developer.
You look it up, and I'll. So this game is somewhat difficult to describe. I think you have to visually see it. So I'll try my best. Bear with me. Like,
it's Roll 7, the guys that did Ollie, by the way.
So it's the nearest thing I can kind of... It's a kind of Rocket League style game, but without cars and footballs, basically. Instead, you have these arenas, and in the arenas there are little posts that if you get to them, so it's team based, so you've got two teams, and if you get to these little posts that appear first, you can create kind of laser fields, and these laser fields, they spin and they move around and things like this. And if you get caught, if you hit a laser field from the opposition, you get knocked over. Your teammates can revive you, but obviously, if the team not of an opposing team knock all three of you down, you lose that round. And yeah, it goes on and it's crazy. And then these lasers sort of like after they'll only be on for like 10 or 20 seconds before they close again, and you have to go and reactivate them. And so you're frantically running around trying to activate all these lasers, trying to command as much of the map as you can, basically. Whilst just trying to just defeat the other team by getting them trapped in your lasers. And you could also, it's like Pac-Man, you can walk off the edge of the map and reappear on the other side. So the map, it's quite a lot of freedom to move and, you know, escape and not get stuck in corners and things like that. But then also you play a certain type of, you know, different classes of characters, and each character has sort of a unique ability that charges up after a while. So you have the thief who can steal lasers that the other team have created, so you can change the color of a laser, for example. Or you have the knight who can sort of knock other players over, stunning them, for example, and things like this. So there's a lot of strategy to it, and it's just it's manically fun and mental, and I find it really hard at times to kind of follow what's going on. I've played a fair few matches now, and I'm just about getting the hang of it. And it's just got that kind of Rocket League feel where even though you're not good at the game, you can still win it. There's kind of feels like there's just a good element of luck and chance. So skill definitely helps you out, but when you play against a skilled team, you know it, but it doesn't necessarily mean you can't beat them. You won't get whitewashed. There's so much crazy stuff going on. It's really good fun. There are also power-ups you can get as well, that drop and help. So power-ups, which can literally close all the lasers, swap which laser colors are owned by which team and things. Yeah, it's utterly bonkers.
Can you direct attack people as well?
Yeah, one of the characters can. Yeah, one of the characters can directly attack and kill. I can't remember what the name of the class is specifically.
But,
yeah,
but
they
mostly,
have like a sword. And
but you mostly like you're actually activating these lasers to attack people. Like controlling the environment is your main attack.
Yes, controlling the environment and then trying to use, once you've got the lasers up, then it switches to kind of trying to use your skills to, you know, stun a player whilst, you know, a laser's going to move right over them whilst they're knocked on the floor and things like that. So that's kind of the strategy to it, really.
Richard, are you watching some video of it? It looks like you're...
Yeah, I'm just looking at its screenshots and that.
Looks mad, doesn't it? It looks like kind of like crazy Tron game.
Yeah.
It's the styling as well is very, very Tron-esque and stuff. There's lots of bright kind of neon colors and things like that.
Is it multiplayer only? I get the impression it would be.
Yes, no, there is a training mode, so that does feature AI bots. And the game, like Rocket League, will, after matchmaking for a while, just backfill with bots, AI and things. So I had a few games where we had an AI on our side and there were a couple of AIs on the other team. The AIs are surprisingly not too bad, though, actually. You'd imagine they'd be the weakest link, but they're actually pretty good at reviving you compared to other players. Because to be honest, half the time you're playing it and you just lose, you're kind of just trying to focus on either avoiding the lasers or trying to use your ability against a specific other enemy team guy or something like that. And you fail to notice that your teammate's down and needs your help and things like that. So there's a lot going on. You can really lose track of things quite quickly.
Situational awareness sounds very, very important for this game. Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah, so it's early access. The code feels good, then the net code feels good, solid. Like, you know, good
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, matchmaking, I didn't have any problem. The only problem, you know, just not many players. So I had to sort of get a couple of AIs in there. But, you know, I haven't had any problems. It's all been pretty straightforward. No issues getting games, not being kicked out of anything. Players are stuck with the games until the end. So,
yeah, I mean, I think the Rocket League comparison is interesting. I'm really up for like a game to come into that sort of social sports space again and really excite people again and get people playing. This does look like it could be it. I mean, it does certainly look chaotic and crazy, and I just love the look of it. I love the aesthetic of it. Yeah, much like, you know, Oli Oli had a really distinct style. Yeah, this is definitely its own thing. So yeah, exciting. I look forward to your full preview.
For an early access title as well, it's well polished as well. I haven't had any crashes or problems with it. So
okay, Joel, that's the wrong name, Richard. But Joel, thank you for telling us about Laser League. I'm very excited to see the preview of that. That was terrible. Oh my God, I forgot who I was talking to. This isn't going well. So what happens when you podcast first thing on a Saturday morning? I'm not rested enough. That's the problem. Richard, did you cry like I did at the end of Call of Duty Infinite Warfare?
No.
You heartless bastard.
Ben and that letter to the robot's manufacturer.
Oh, is this the end credits?
Yeah,
the letters.
When you listen to all the letters, yeah.
Got Ben crying.
Got me in tears, mate. I was blubbing. No, I don't think I was crying, but I did find it quite surprisingly emotional for a Call of Duty game. I was impressed that they were able to.
I'll give it that. Yeah, they did. They took more care than ever before in a Call of Duty game, didn't they, to give the characters something to invest in.
Definitely.
Yeah. Across the
board. So you did finish it. I think I saw you get the achievement, so I assumed you finished it anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, I finished it last week and immediately started going through it again. Really enjoyed it. A lot because of the story, because I think Call of Duty often misses out on stringing together its missions with any sort of coherence. Mm-hmm. They're often just there for something to do. You know, what is the next set piece that we want to do, kind of vibe. But yeah, Infinite Warfare, really really brilliant campaign, one of the best COD campaigns I've played
easily years. Yeah,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Out there,
But playing on the Xbox One X as well, it's just it's got to be up there with one of the best looking things on the X at the moment. That mission where you're on the mining asteroid that's spinning out of control near the sun.
Oh yeah, yeah, you've got to avoid the sun as it comes up and around. Yeah.
And just seeing that sun come over the horizon every few seconds in HDR and 4K, it just looks it's so beautiful.
I really need to go. I mean, I was blown away by that campaign when I did it for review a couple of years ago. I really need to go back and play it now that it's on X and stuff and enhanced. I'm guessing the frame rate's rock solid, high.
It's absolutely
60.
Solid. Yeah, there's not a flaw in the game. It's just perfect.
Mm. I think that game got a really short
sort
got
of, kind of ignored a bit, didn't it? Changed. Got a short shrift, yeah. Even when released alongside the remaster of Modern Warfare, which I haven't tried yet. But yeah, it just seems a shame that one of the best ones seems to have been overlooked. So we're probably not going to see anything like that for a while.
No, it's all going to be fucking World War II shit again now, isn't it? I think the rumor is the next one is another Black Ops, which I just don't care about at all.
No, I kind of went. I went back to Black Ops 2 and 3 because I've not finished either of them after Infinite Warfare, and just, this is right. I realized that this is why I haven't finished them. Then both boring.
Yeah, they're just really boring.
Yeah,
really, really boring. Anyway, and Joel's been dipping into the old catalog here a little bit, looking at this as well. So Observer, because yeah. I didn't love Observer when I tried to play that for Game of the Year considerations. I really didn't connect with it. But how did you feel about it?
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it enough to go through and complete it in two sittings. Yeah, it's bloody psychedelic and in places, really trippy, because you know you've got these augmented implants and the way it's sort of you know, the standard world is I'm just trying to think, you know, the way that it sort of draws edges and things, so your sort of your implants are sort of outlining the world and this sort of wireframe and things, so it makes it, you know, things look, it looks kind of cool, and it felt very claustrophobic. It's very, you know, the actual environment that you get to explore is very small, and it's like narrow corridors. You know, some of the, when you sort of go into some people's minds and stuff like that, it's there are some open areas and it's a bit creepy and stuff. And there's lots of sort of imagery and Orwellian theming and all that kind of stuff. I quite enjoyed it. Just trying to think of other things that are.
The plot
was all right. As well, it wasn't mind blowing. It was okay.
Problem I had was I found the dream mind hacking stuff incredibly cliche, which was all just like, oh look, the walls are moving, and look, oh no, the floors disappeared, and now the halls got really long.
I thought that was supposed to be because the people you're either hacking into the mind of are either dead or dying. There's that one, that person whose mind you go into who's just alive, aren't they? But when it finishes up with them dying, and it's sort of...
It just felt like horror tropes. Like they were just ticking them off. I mean, these are the guys that did Layers of Fear, aren't they? And it's like, it just didn't feel inventive. I mean, the setting is ripped out of Blade Runner, and then... And the horror elements, like I've seen a million times before, like the way in which video games do horror by like trying to make you feel uncomfortable, make your setting confusing and stuff. But I've seen it all. Christ, it made me think of Max Payne when you were walking around the blood trail. It's just like this is tropes that I've seen a trillion times at this point, and none of it felt particularly inventive. I mean, it was fine, but I didn't understand why it was coming up. The reason I looked at it is I know it was coming up on some people's Game of the Year discussion. And I was like, oh, right, okay. And then I was like, really? Like, what's the deal with that? I don't get it. It just didn't.
As a game, set me alight. There's not much real gameplay to it. You walk around, you interact with a few objects. In general, it's actually a rather linear experience. There's not much you can do. The scanning the bodies, you know, it's full of kind of cool concepts, but they don't make for necessarily great gameplay. But I did enjoy the presentation of it. The psychedelic aspects are a bit trippy, and I found them quite cool. I like the way that as you're playing through, sometimes it skews. Obviously, it's your own problem with your own implants and stuff, so you sort of reality sort of becomes these psychedelic experiences and things like that. I didn't think it was that bad. I wouldn't say it was great. I enjoyed it. And yeah, it was an interesting ending, I would guess.
Also, you know, it was Rutger Hauer doing his best voice acting. Well, the best voice acting you can get from Rutger Hauer when all you pay him with is a Boots meal deal. so it was just like, I've turned up. He might have done it on the phone for you know, how much it sounded like he phoned it in. I'm going to deliver every line like this with no emotional inflection or really giving any shits. And it was just, mate, I'll stick to you on Blade Runner. It's stunt casting, wasn't it? It's like, oh, we're going to do a Blade Runner style video game. I wonder if we can get Rutger Hauer to come be in our video game. Oh, yeah, okay, I have a meal deal. There you go. I suppose that's all he needs now. But, yeah, I was hoping for so much more. And it was fine. It's fine. I think we're all a bit too obsessed with the cyberpunk shit at the moment. It's everywhere. Mm-hmm. Fucking crazy for it, like, isn't it? With Blade Runners, Altered Carbons, Jesus, everything is cyberpunk. It's like, man, I remember when this shit was special, and now everyone and their granny's doing it.
I think I'm up for something like that. That's just fine. It doesn't need to be brilliant. I quite enjoyed Layers of Fear. So,
yeah, you got on with that. You reviewed it, didn't you? Yeah. You reviewed Layers of Fear. I remember that. You gave it like I think it was back on Brit Xbox. It was 8 out of 10 or something. You gave it 7 out of 10.
I can't remember what I gave it, but
something like it was quite high.
I was looking at it yesterday, thinking, "Oh, I quite fancy going through that again."
They're putting it on Switch
for me, so
it's on Switch. Well, it's going to be on. If it's not on Switch, it is very soon, I believe. Yeah,
yeah, it is on Switch now, but it's like £18, and I thought, oh, I could go and play that on Xbox again.
You mean the Switch tax? Like every game that comes out on Switch is £10 more than it is on any other platform right now. Oh, it's almost like they know people will buy anything they put on it. It's crazy, all these indie games that are getting re-released. The only one I think I saw that I didn't think was ripping you off was like Stardew Valley like a tenner. That's the only one I saw that was like not ridiculous.
That's what it's always at the top of the download chart.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it makes sense. I actually might buy that again. I think that'd be fun to play portable.
They're adding a multiplayer to that very soon.
I know. Don't say very soon. That developer has delayed more shit than fucking anyone ever.
He's finished it now, so it's just a case of when it gets from his computer, I guess, onto all the other systems through QA, I would say. So hopefully soon.
Well, then I would definitely pick it up. If it's going to be multiplayer on Switch, that would be fucking awesome. Yeah, I'd play that. We could all get in, make a little town together. Oh, that'd be so much fun.
I thought they'd done that ages ago because they said that the multiplayer was coming to Switch first.
Well, they've
it's supposed to be.
He's been working on it for about two or three years.
Yeah, he's been talking about the multiplayer since the game came out, like since before the game came out, actually. So, yeah, it's read that book. We read Joel. Remember that was what was it called? Pixel something.
Blood, Sweat, and Pixels. There's a that was my favorite chapter in that book. Was about
It was fascinating.
Concerned Ape as the sole developer of Stardew Valley.
Yeah, that was it was really really good chapter. It's really actually, good. It's a great book. Check it out. Warframe, Joel.
Have you guys played this?
No.
It's a free to play.
Downloaded it
on the PC.
Yeah. It's on everything. It's on everything.
Is it on everything? Yeah. Is it? Yeah. I just played it on Steam. I've heard a few other people talking about it. I've gone and played it. I was playing it a bit last night. Just matched up with some random guy. Just going through missions. Yeah, I was quite enjoying it. I think it's
get it. Download it on Xbox, Joel, and we'll do some multiplayer because it's the thing where I downloaded it when it first came out. And from what I've heard, it's a very different beast.
It's ancient. It's like 2011 or 13 or something when it was originally released. But it's been incrementally, you know, they've been working on it and developing it and stuff. And, a lot of people are talking very positively about it. So I thought I'd just dip in and see what it was about. Yeah, okay, I didn't realise it was on Xbox.
I believe it's X-Enhanced as well.
Yeah, Xbox. Sweet. There we go. No, excuse, I am playing it with a controller on the PC, actually. I'm finding it easier with a controller than the keyboard and mouse.
So. I keep meaning to it because I've got a friend who's always like, he's mad into it and he's banging on about it all the time on PC. He's like, it's the greatest thing. It's all these crazy expansions. You've got an open world stuff in there now. There's big, loads of different, like, mech. I don't know what they're called. They have a funny name.
Warframes.
Frames. Yes, you're right. That is might be where the title came from. There you go. Yeah. But no, he's always raving about it. He buys the comic book. There's a comic book for it now. It's coming out. And he's crazy into it. And I'm like, oh, maybe. It's like one of those games. It's like World of Tanks, which I would like to spend more time with as well. And it's like there is some very good free-to-play offerings now available, even on console. But yeah, Warframe is that one where I keep on hearing, go, why would you play Destiny when you can just play this for free?
Yeah, I'm stunned. As a free-to-play game, it's quality. The quality, you know, it looks amazing. It looks very good. Well done. You know, well presented. Good cinematics. Good cutscenes. Voice acting seems okay. You know, it seems to have. I'm just curious where the twist. I just keep playing it, thinking, right, where's it gonna? Where's the twist?
Wall.
Well, I've already seen a bit. You know, it's already saying like you can buy upgrades for weapons and stuff. But I haven't felt compelled to do anything yet. I keep getting more cards, and I just keep adding them to my weapons and getting like 10% damage buffs and stuff. I don't feel underpowered or like the game's become insufferably hard. I'm still. God, I'm only about 5 missions into it, so I'm not going to... It's got plenty of time to sort of add that on as you get to the end game. So, yeah, but...
I remember you have your own spaceship, don't you?
Yeah, as well. Yeah. That's the hub world that it keeps returning me to after missions, basically. So rather than having sort of a shared Destiny-style tower, I've just got my ship I can go around and do stuff in.
That's cool. Yeah, I might download that again. I keep meaning to give it another shake, so if you're looking at giving it a go a bit more as well... Maybe we'll join in. I feel like, though, Richard, we need to end this episode on some hyperkinetic climax action. So let's talk about Bayonetta on the Switch, baby. Playing it for the first time, in my case, playing Bayonetta for the very first time. I bought Bayonetta 2. When you buy Bayonetta 2 physically, you get a copy of Bayonetta 1 as download code, weirdly, for free as part of that pack. And I did that, and now I'm experiencing it. And oh god damn, that game is mental, crazy cool.
Good. Right? I've not tried the first one on Switch yet because I played it back in the day, but I did buy it. I got it digitally because you like you say, if you buy the cartridge, you get a download of the first one for free. It works slightly differently when you download Bayonetta 2. You get a discount One for £10 instead of £25. So I did that.
So yeah.
So, okay, yeah. So what does that? I mean, how much is Bayonetta 2 digitally?
£40. So it works out £50 for the two.
I think I spent £40 for the two. So that was physically. Yeah. I'm weirdly the Switch for me is the only platform I'm doing physical. I like having physical Switch games. I know that's strange, but I have about a dozen of them now. Physically, it's weird.
I don't know. It seems even more important to me for Switch to not have cartridges because you're taking it around with you. I don't want to lose any cartridges.
I like the little boxes. I like my. I've got a carry case which has got all little slots for it. It's all good. Look, I'll show you.
Okay.
It's my carry case. Look. Ooh, look, it's got like games in it. Okay, there they are. Whoa, yeah, games.
I've got the same case.
It's a good case. Yeah. Anyway, but I like them.
Good, isn't it? How come you didn't play it when it came out?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I mean, I think I saw it and I just went, oh, over-sexualized Japanese bullshit and dismissed it. Because like, and then
over-sexualized Japanese bullshit.
Damn right. Yeah. That's the effect of Gamergate. So I was like, I didn't really know about Platinum. I didn't really know about their prestigious sort of games back then and stuff and what they've done. Like, you know, I didn't really connect. I think Vanquish was before that. That's now backwards compatible, by the way, on Xbox One.
Yeah.
It just didn't look like it would appeal to me. But now I've heard so many good things and I've been brainwashed clearly by the liberal press out there telling me how good this game is, like Richard. And I'm checking it out. And it is crazy. Just there's not really any words. It's just mad. Yeah,
pretty crazy, isn't it?
The little Sega and Nintendo Easter eggs are a lot of the fun. It's nice to see that stuff. And there's a load of costume things that have been patched into the first one from what you said. I've not seen it, but that's in Bayonetta 2 as well. So I've been cracking out my amiibos and getting my Princess Peach costumes for Bayonetta.
It's got sexy Link.
Really sexy Star Fox costume. It's quite disconcerting.
Is that like furry involved as well? Like with a big furry McCloud?
Yeah, furry ears. It's got a big tail coming out of the back.
Oh, sexy. Oh, yeah. Now you're talking. But no, it runs buttery. It's so cool that you can take a game like that on the go. Oh, my. I don't know if that's ever going to wear off, guys. How badass it feels to play games like that just on the bus or when I'm at work.
That looks nice on the Switch. Magic. Shame it's just a cutscene. Fucking isn't, because when you start changing costumes, you see it's all like proper in-engine stuff. But how is it doing this? And how does it still look good? This is like a 2-year-old game from the Wii U, but it still looks cutting edge. marvelous.
But Bayonetta 1 looks pretty good as well, to be honest. But I'm not. I think it's been touched up, like for the re-release. But I don't know much more about it. But it looks nice. I mean, sometimes the environmental textures are a bit flat and stuff, but characters look good, which is really what you're looking at. Yeah. More than anything, you know, when you're trying to follow all that mad ass act, just insane action. I'm still quite early on, but I'm definitely in this week. I'm planning on putting some time into that, unless anything else shows up in the old inbox. But I think that brings us quite comfortably in under the 2 hour mark as well, guys. You know, for this Saturday morning show. Is there anything either of you'd like to touch upon before we
don't want to hear about the new Shadow of Colossus?
Oh, I missed that. See, yeah, I'm a bit upset. This is one of the things that makes me want to buy a Pro, guys, because I'm really tempted to buy a Pro, though wife's not happy with me spending that money. But she's against the idea. She's like, what do you need another fucking PlayStation for? And I'm like, because of 4K. And she's like, fuck off.
It was better in the old days, wasn't it, when all women were just sluts and shut up
and servants. That was, they knew their place back in Bohemia. They knew where they belonged. It's like, well, you know, if I said to a woman back then 4K, she'd just be confused because she's probably too stupid to understand words. But that's fine.
That's progress
for you. Damn progress. Bring back that glass ceiling. So that's the thing. I want Shadow of Colossus in 4K HDR'd up. I imagine it looks insanely good. Is it, Joel?
Yeah, it does look impressive. It takes me right back to playing it back in the old PS2 days. And it's really funny because I was playing a game and it's just like the first thought is just like, oh yeah, this is how I remember it looks, kind of thing. Even though if you go and look at videos of it now, it looks infinitely improved over to how it was. It is the high resolution textures, the scale of the game is very impressively done. The draw distance now, you can literally see to the horizon, is amazing. And yeah, so it's visually is very, very good. The sort of hairs on the colossi themselves are it's brilliant the way it all waves in the wind and stuff like that. So yeah, graphically they've done an immense job on it. Gameplay is pretty much exactly the same. The camera will piss you off to the end of Earth because it's fucking awful.
No, they've
not made any gameplay fixes as far as I can tell.
They talked about tweaking stuff, but
the camera just every time you want to get a view, it's just always like, oh God's sakes, you can never get it to kind of look exactly where you want to. But I guess that's just part of the clunkiness and quirkiness of the game, because it is still a great game. I feel like an absolute asshole when I play it, because you're literally just going around killing 12 majestic beasts to selfishly get your wife or girlfriend back to life, which means you're an asshole.
Horrible, isn't it?
Yeah,
it is horrible.
So you play it the whole time and you know your horse, you're just using him. He loves your horse, loves you, he'll never leave your side. It's like, no, you're just, you know, I don't care about you. Yeah. Excellent game, like very impressive HD remake. If you've never played Shadow of the Colossus before, it's definitely the time. The game is still great fun to play. It still feels incredibly unique. You just have these 16 colossi to battle with and climb, each one a kind of unique puzzle combined with the environment to try and figure out how to get on them and kill them. Yeah, absolutely superb. The worst part about it is now, actually, I have this thing where like I sort of play some games with my son now. He's getting old enough and he likes to watch me play a few games. So he's been seeing me play a bit of Shadow of the Colossus. So he likes to see the bear and the monkey and things. But now it's turned into real world Shadow of the Colossus, where he has to try and climb on me. And like, so I have to walk around whilst he's on various bits of furniture trying to jump at me. And then
that's brilliant.
Yeah.
So you haven't explained to him the nuance of you have to kill daddy so that
I don't kill the colossi, I just climb around them and we go on their head and stuff like that.
That's a brighter outcome than I thought you were leading to, because I thought you were gonna leave me. This is where your child learns about mortality.
Yeah, no, nearly, because I went I had to go back to one of the colossi and I'd killed it earlier. And like, he's like, can I see the bear? I was like, oh, I'll go see the bear. Going back there, expecting it would let me just replay it. Forgetting that you actually have to do it through the statues in the hallway once you completed the game. I get back there, it's just this bear's corpse covered in sand and stuff. And my son's just like, is he sleeping? I'm just like, yes.
Having a nap. Like,
bear's not feeling well today. We'll come back another day.
Jesus. And there's something else on this list I think I nearly missed. Briefly touch upon this because we'll obviously be talking about it a lot once we've got the full release. But Richard, you finally got a chance to play some Sea of Thieves.
Yeah, the closed beta is available at the moment and doing some stress tests. So I had a quick go of that today. And yeah, feels good. You've played it a long while ago, haven't you, Ben? But
yeah, and weirdly, what I played, I still can't actually talk about.
Oh, really?
I'd have to see what was in the open or the closed beta because that's what's not under NDA. But what I actually played was under NDA. It's all a bit weird because it's changed quite a bit. Like, there's a lot more in the game now, even though it's not anywhere near supposedly what we're saying what will be in it at release. But I can, if you talk about some stuff, I can jump in if it's stuff that's all been, you know, released into the open.
I think I got a good feel for it. So anyone who's not seen this, it's a pirate game. You go on a pirate ship with a bunch of other pirate mates or strangers, as I did today. First time in a while I've played with randoms, actually, but that was good fun. So you've got a crew of four people, you go on your boat and you just go where you want and kind of just do whatever, innit? You've got a list of objects that you can use to do different jobs around your boat and on islands when you land. So that includes repairing holes in the hull. You've got a bucket to empty any water out. You can, I did get into combat. Yeah. So you've got a cutlass and a revolver pistol thing where you can fight. I fought some skeletons on an island.
Oh, you didn't get into ship versus ship combat.
No, I didn't do that today.
That's where that game comes a fucking life. Like, okay, how do I talk about this? Okay.
There's the E3 video, isn't there, Ben, that literally shows ship-to-ship combat, including boarding. So
it's mad. I mean, how many people were you playing with? Three others? Richard?
Yes,
three others. How closely you have to work together when you're doing the ship stuff, because you're like, for example, did you drive a ship? Did you get on the wheel?
I kind of did, yeah. I joined.
Do you realize how little you can see when you actually drive the ship? It's crazy. So you're relying on the person in the crow's nest to give you directions and give you compass headings and stuff like that. And then of course when you're in combat, you've got guys manning the cannons as well. Yeah. And that's, so it's all to trying to come together and sort of work together to achieve these things.
It didn't get that complicated when I was playing it. I joined a game when there was three others already on a boat. So I was the fourth to join them. And I spawned on the boat and there's no one there. I thought, well, this game doesn't work. It's supposed to have match made me into this session.
Delete!
Yeah. So I thought, well, while I'm here, I'll have a pootle about on the boat. Raised the anchor and started sailing off.
Brilliant, you jacked their boat.
Yeah, yeah, I look over it to the island. I saw these three people in the distance running out from this cave. Like, where's the boat going? So I quickly turned it round and put a big hole in the hull.
Brilliant. They must have loved you.
Yeah, they loved me.
Hi, I've just joined your game. I'm trying to steal your ship and now I'm going to sink it. Hello, I'm Richard.
What the fuck, man? That's terrible. Yeah, this is a game where, oh my God, it will be so much fun playing with people you know.
Totally.
This is all about us lot playing together. I mean, I believe there are different sized ships now, depending on the amount of people playing. So you can get a one-man, two-man, three-man, four-man vessels so that it can make it easier. Like, you get little, what do they call them? Scoops? Something like that. Little schooners and things up to big vessels. Sloop. And stuff like that. Sloop. That's it. Yeah. Thank you. So I think that's new. That wasn't there.
when I played it and stuff like that. I think they've done a lot with combat as well. There's more weapons. Melee combat wasn't there when I first tech checked out as well. I think it looks stunning as well, doesn't it? What a lovely art style. The sea, oh my God, in that game looks just unreal.
The water especially does look stunning, which is good because I suppose you're going to be looking at that a lot.
Yes,
the rest of it, I wouldn't say it's out there. It looks serviceable. It's fine.
It's got a nice art style, though, hasn't it? I mean, it isn't trying to be photorealistic.
It's not meant to be photorealistic. Yeah. It's got quite a simplistic look, but the water itself is spot on.
And remember, if you have a Game Pass subscription, you will get this included with that.
Yeah, that's
in March.
That'll be the way I'm going to get it.
Check it out. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, fair enough. So, I wonder if anyone I'll call you for that.
Buy it, because that just seems mad.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. What's the point of actually buying it? Just sign up to Game Pass, literally.
I believe
even if you cancel your sub after 3 months, it will still come in cheaper than
there are
physical release. Yeah, or digital.
There are some pre-order items for it, but beyond that, I don't think there's anything for buying it really. We'll find out. I mean, we don't know what the back end deal is there, do we? I mean, Rare is first party owned by Microsoft, so you know, what's the financial situation now? I imagine there isn't anything.
They'll get paid regardless.
So it all goes into the coffers. They get paid or closed down, don't they? That's that's it.
What it will guarantee for them is a huge player base in and around launch, at least, which means you're never going to have struggle to find players to play in a game, which is, of course, all about social interaction. So for something like that, that's fucking genius, really, isn't it? So it's pretty awesome.
Staggeringly good. And
I suppose they can't risk not allowing Rare to succeed on this one, can they? Because they've owned them for God knows how many years now, over a decade, and they've not had a big hit yet. So
do we
has to do well.
Right. I'm just going to Google the release date so we know exactly what it is.
March, middle of March, isn't it?
Yeah, I know it's something like that, but I was just going to see if we can get the 20th of March.
Okay.
20th of March. So next few weeks time. Damn excited. I can't wait to play it. Yeah, I've not bothered with the stress tests or beta stuff because I put about 4 or 5 hours into it when early on with some guys from BXB community and stuff back in the day, which feels like years ago when I played that now. Like they've been testing and developing that for a long time. So I'm really excited to see what this final release shapes up to be. Fingers crossed it's going to be good. I think the science points would be in a pretty unique experience. Whether or not it's going to hold our attention for a protracted amount of time, we'll find out. So that does, I think, bring us to the end of episode 41 of BXB's Bits and Bobs, after I nearly closed us down without talking about those two games, which was showing my rustiness there. This obviously has been 3 weeks since our last podcast. We aim for two. We don't promise two. I don't anywhere say, that's what's going to happen. But fingers crossed, we'll be back in about 2 or 3 weeks again with another show. You can obviously, in that time, we'll have reviews and content. Joel's working on a really interesting article that will be out quite soon-ish on the site. I don't want to spoil that, but it's going to be worth checking out. We've got lots of Switch games. The thing with the Switch releases, guys, is that it's like they just show up, don't they? A lot of them. The indie games especially. Now that's on the system. Okay, yeah. Now that's on there as well. So there's always going to be cool new stuff coming. I'm quite looking forward to... what's it called? The Darkest Dungeon finally making it to Xbox. I might pick that up again on Xbox and check that out and get some achievements. That's a fantastic game. But that's on Switch. So probably if you're going to buy it on Switch. Lots of games, even though it's the quiet time of year. Lots of smaller titles. And Sea of Thieves in a few weeks' time. So check us out at bxbgames.co.uk. Check us out on iTunes, BXB Games. Review us there if you like. Give us only give us 5 stars. Anything less, you can fuck off. You can find us on Twitter at BXB Games. what Richard's not, I'm not gonna lie. I mean, like, I only want 5-star reviews. All those people shouting at me on YouTube about Gamergate bullshit for the Kingdom Come Deliverance review. Guess what, guys? I can delete YouTube comments. And I will. Don't even bother wasting my time with that. One guy was like, you should be supporting Gamergate with an attitude like that. Did you watch my review? Support them. What the fuck is wrong with you people? So you can find us at BXB Games is on YouTube, BXB Games on Facebook, BXB Games on Twitter. You can find me personally at DIYE at Twitter. Joel, where can they find you? You're on Twitter. Joel's on Twitter.
I am on Twitter. I can't remember what my handle is. I joined up because Ben was sort of talking about how he was getting great retweets. I think it might be Nuclear Red Eye. I think it is.
Yeah.
Nuclear Red Eye.
And Richard, where can they find you?
I'm at Colonel Red.
He is indeed the always red Colonel. You got that M Bison. Is it an M Bison avatar you use?
No, it's not. It's Colonel Red, obviously, from Gunstar Heroes.
I never played it. your obscure retro flipping video game references. God, Jesus. You're such an old man, Richard. It's unbelievable. Right. We'll be back soon with more video game talk. Or maybe just Netflix. That's possible too. See you in a few weeks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.